I'm going to call the meeting to order. Good evening, everyone, including the vast audience we have this evening. Hi, guys. Welcome to the October 24th meeting of the Douglas County Planning Commission, Lawrence Douglas County Planning Commission. First item will be to receive the minutes of the last meeting. Mr. Finkeldey.
Oh.
Oh, somebody else?
I had a question.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Here it is. On page 20, and probably the 10th attempt you took at making a motion on the shooting range issue, at the bottom of that page, on number 10, there's a lead management conditions. And then if you go to the next page, it says the Planning Commission revised the conditions, and the conditions noted above have been revised to reflect this. And then you skip down, it says some wording there. My concern was, does this replace the earlier version, or is it a clarification of? And Scott said that he, well, Scott, you want to?
We'll try that. Yes, Commissioner, thanks for the question, and we'll need to, I think, review the minutes, the audio, a little closer to make sure that it's accurately reflected. And as I was telling Ms. Von Aachen earlier, one important issue here is that the County Commission, I think, is scheduled to see this for a final time this week, so we need to also make sure that our resolution to the county is accurate in the Commission's motion, because I don't think this particular condition was revised at the County Commission level, but for Wednesday, we need to vet this out a little bit. So my advice would maybe be to defer these minutes to next month. Let us go back and research whether this wording reflects the motion appropriately and correctly and accurately, and then bring that back to you next month.
It certainly was a very convoluted motion.
Yes, sir.
And I apologize for that. Commissioner Lease?
From talking to Commissioner Gahn at the MPO meeting, I got the impression that they heard it already. Is that incorrect?
That they what?
Right.
The County Commission, as I understand it, heard it last week and did want some language drafted up to address the noise issue, mitigating the noise of the firing range. And so I believe that that's coming back to them for a final review this week. And so it's good timing that we're talking about this motion, your motion, and the language here. So we have to. I learned about this 10 minutes ago. We'll take tomorrow and research and study and make sure that we've got accurate language in the county resolution as well.
Okay. Did you make a motion?
I did not.
Okay.
How do we handle a motion into this?
Commissioner Singleton.
Second.
Motion to defer. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Commissioner Finkeldey. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed, same sign. We have 8 here tonight. 8-0.
No.
Oh, you abstained? Okay. Commissioner Berger abstained. So 7-0 with one abstention. Okay. Committee reports. Any committee reports? Mr. Blazer.
Mr. Chairman. The MPO met last week, and we had seven out of eight, but we're still missing a city commissioner as one of our members, and so we would encourage them to fulfill that. We did several things, one of which you'll hear tonight, and that's the Tiger Funds request, which it is our item number 3. We also basically did the same thing. We also approved the funding on the TIP basically for the next 4 years. In fact, the whole TIP program has been rewritten finally. It's the last thing that the MPO had to do to meet all the state requirements, and that was 50-some pages of
stuff.
But we did approve that. And then we also approved the Unified Work Planning Program for this next year, the budget amount for that. So, and then the Advisory Committee for 2040 meets next Tuesday, I think, November 1st. Anyway, the Advisory Committee meets again, which is like 18 people, so I'm not sure what we're going to advise on. But anyway, that's a lot of people.
Better you than me. Better you than me.
Any other committee reports? I'll tell you that the Agritourism Committee continues to meet monthly, and we've been looking at draft language. Mary and I met with Commissioner Thelman last week, I think it was, to talk about the language for consideration by the commission. And I think we'll have something back either for a mid-month or for the commission's review in probably the next 30 days. So we're getting close. Okay, communications.
Mr. Chairman, we posted some communications that we received by the cutoff today. There are no waivers to report to you this week.
Okay. Disclosure of ex parte communications. Anyone have any ex parte communications to disclose? Mr. Berger.
I received numerous emails from Remington Place residents as well as Oread residents with concerns over development and planning decisions on this month's agenda and then also concerning next month's agenda.
Okay, anyone else? Commissioner Lease?
Yeah, as, as referenced earlier in MPO, Commissioner Mike Gaughan did approach me and had questions about how we made our decision that was 5-4 regarding Inverness. He said the minutes were, he said the minutes weren't completely clear and that we didn't give as many details as we could have, and I shared that I think the minutes made sense to us because we were there and we remembered what everything was referenced, but he asked for clarification on that. Just why it was so close, and the difference between the two options was a big issue. They were pretty close options, and when it was explained to him, he said that was helpful. And I don't recall if you were involved in that question. You were at the meeting, okay? So he was just kind of asking about it. So as long as that still hasn't been decided, I will report that.
Okay. Anyone else? Are there any abstentions this evening? No abstentions. Okay, then we'll move.
Mr. Chairman, something Commissioner Lease just said, I think you asked if, as long as that hasn't been decided.
It has been decided. After been decided. I said okay. It, I realized I was wrong and I didn't want to interrupt our chair. Thank you.
Planning Commission, City Commission, and in fact County Commission have all approved the Inverness District Park Plan.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, then we'll move into our agenda items. Item number one is the annexation of 45.4 acres at West 6th and South Lawrence Traffic Way. Michelle?
Good evening, Commissioners. Michelle Leininger, Planning Staff. Item one is an annexation request. Here's a map showing a reference. This street along the bottom of the map is West 6th Street, and then up the west side is K-10 or South Lawrence Traffic Way. The property highlighted in blue up here is the property that we're looking at. It's a piece of property that was dedicated to the city. It is actually a creek that runs through there. The city has put a sanitary sewer line through that area also. It is very steep terrain. There's floodplain there, obviously, and a lot of trees. Some key points, like I said, this is city-owned property, sited for a future park to be potentially have a trail on it, nothing extremely developed. Horizon 2020 supports adding a park in this area and the expansion of the park system, and also protection of environmental features, helps protect and buffer that stream that's there, and it allows the preservation of the trees and steep slopes in that area. The park is within a half a mile of the city limits. And like I said previously, city sanitary sewer facilities are located within the property. Staff does recommend approval of the request for annexation, and additionally recommends that the Planning Commission initiate a rezoning from A district to OS and A district to OS-FP, which is open space-FP. Our code outlines a floodplain overlay for 2 feet beyond the designated floodplain, so we don't have a legal description, but that will come back with a legal description at this time. So we would just ask that you initiate those two rezonings, and those will come back to you at a later date.
Okay, thank you. This is a public hearing item. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak? Come on up, Gwen.
Actually, I want to say is I did talk to the president of the West Lawrence Association today, and we support parks, and we would like to see more in our neighborhood. I have to get into a car to get to any park in my neighborhood, so we do support parks. And the Planning Commission in the mid-2000s were very worried about the Baldwin Creek because it's sensitive and easily damaged, so I really support this because it does help protect the Baldwin Creek.
Thank you, Gwen. Does anyone else wish to speak on this item? In that case, we'll close the public hearing and bring it back to the commissioners for discussion or motions. Commissioner Lease.
I consider that area my neighborhood. It's as close to my neighborhood as the city gets. that's our regular running trail. I went to the site and pretty much walked the whole thing, and because I was so impressed and so excited about that being a park, I would like to be the one to make the motion to approve the requested annexation of 45.5 acres located north and east of the intersection of West 6th Street and South Lawrence Traffic Way, and initiate rezonings from agriculture to open space and open space floodplain overlay district.
Is there a second? Commissioner Blazer, excuse me, discussion on the motion. Commissioner Von Aachen.
I just had a question. Will this park be groomed, or would it be left somewhat in a natural state? I know they talked about walking trails, but do you know to what extent it will be manicured?
As far as I know, they don't. If they do any grooming, it'll just be minimal. All that we were told is that potential for a parking trail in the future, which lends itself to probably a little bit of clearing for our maybe a parking lot, but they have no plans at this time.
Okay, Mr. Lease.
Just to respond, there are a bunch of little parking areas for that trail over there, and generally they're not even asphalted. They're just gravel, and they're usually six cars and just a trailhead, and it seems pretty naturally groomed. It's not overgrown at all. I wasn't worried about snakes or anything walking through it.
Snakes are nothing to worry about.
I just had a friend that nearly died from a snake bite. So Pshaw.
Okay, any other discussion? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, raise your hand. All those opposed, same sign. Motion carries 8-0 with the student in the affirmative. Don't let me forget that, okay? Oh, and I was supposed to introduce our new student member. It's Corey Davis, is that right? I can't see from here, so. But we welcome you as a new student member of the Planning Commission. Glad to have you. Okay, item two is the text amendment. This will be the big item for the evening. Michelle?
Item two, it's a text amendment to the development code regarding RS protections. Just a brief overview, what we're gonna look at, revisions to the setbacks, side and rear, adjacent to RS zone districts. This is in Article 6. Come on. We separated the RM12 and RM12D density and dimensional standards in Article 6. We did some clarification of the maximum building lot coverage and maximum impervious surface coverage in Article 6. Removed a standard out of Article 2 where the descriptions of the districts are, and left them more appropriately in Article 6. And then moved a definition from Article 6 and put it in the terms and definitions section. Some history of how we got to this point. This was initiated as a result of a staff proposed change to Article 6 with the PD overlay that was done earlier this year. Planning Commission additionally initiated some changes to correct some inconsistencies in Article 6 while we were looking at it. These are the things that you'll see with the building lot coverage and some of the other non-RS amendments. Was deferred from the September Planning Commission due to the late hour. Go through these individually here. Article 2 changes are to Section 211 and 212. Again, we just removed a standard. We've been trying to slowly remove, we found that there are some standards mixed in with the descriptions of the districts in Article 2, and really that's not an appropriate place to have standards. So when we're able to catch some of those, we're trying to move them to a more appropriate area, which this is a duplication of a standard in the density and dimensional table. These are the sections we're proposing to change in Article 6. And maybe, here we go. Really, this is the part that I'm gonna try to explain. This is where this whole text amendment started from. It's the article out of the back of Article 6, it's RS protection section. Generally, I've tried to make this a little more understandable. The first part of the paragraph states that any structure shall be set back from the lot line adjoining an RS district by the minimum setbacks in Article 601 when the building or structure is the same or lesser height than the structure on the adjoining RS lot. So if you have a non-RS lot and you want to build on that property, you have to match the height of the structure on the RS lot. The second part of that section is when the height of the structure exceeds the height of the structure on the RS lot, the minimum setback for the non-RS properties shall be equal to the structure's height. So the non-RS structure on the non-RS lot has to be set back equal to the building height if it's not going to be equal to the RS lot, if that makes sense. The reason we had brought this forward initially is some potential issues. The existing RS structure gets to dictate the height of the surrounding non-RS structures. The RS structure had the option to build to 35 feet. This is limiting the non-RS structure to be built to whatever that person decided to build their house. So if they decided to build a 13-foot tall house, which is pretty short, that non-RS structure would have to match it or be set back the height that they would like the structure to be. Does not take into consideration the use of the structure, the non-RS lot. You could have something that may be appropriate. You could have, on that non-RS lot, you could have a single dwelling residential with a special use permit, but it's potential. You could have a duplex, and that RS structure height would limit what that potential similar use could be. Something we also figured out was that the structure height is followed by the surrounding structures. But if you have a single-story house on one side and a two-story house on another side, and maybe a story and a half on the other side, the standard gives no direction as to which that you would follow. And there is a potential that this could create some difficulties in infill lots with smaller 50-foot lots where you could potentially have a two-story house and you would have to build a one-story house just because that's what your neighbor has.
It would be a non-RS.
Yes. So. But you could have a house there. Or, you know, a two-story duplex or, you know, something like that. Okay. The structure, I shouldn't have used house. The structure has to match the height. I know this is hard to see, so you probably want to follow along in the staff report.
43 out of some page. It's our page 43.
They're not all highlighted.
Thank
you. I got it. This should be this is 601A. Is what I'm looking at. What we've done is we have broken out the RM12 and RM12D into their own standards, or into their own columns, so that they can have their own standards. Really, the only thing that's different between the two is when we added the side interior to try to address the setback issues. RM12D does not have that additional side interior adjacent to an RS, where all the other RM districts were proposing to change that. The discussion we had was that the RM12D is really intended to be that transitional district between your low density multifamily and your higher density single family, with that similar structure type in the duplex and the impacts. So that was more of the transitional area. Also on here, which you probably can't see up there, made changes to footnote 5, which talks about additional setbacks adjacent to RS districts and different standards that might also be applicable. We went ahead and listed out the specific sections to reference to. It was sort of an ambiguous footnote that just led you to say, well, there may be more sections, but you're going to have to look through the code to find those out. So we specifically listed out those sections. And additionally, footnote 6 we've deleted since it referenced RM12D and RM12 having the same standards. We've proposed to change that. This is the yellow highlighted row is something that we added to try to address deleting that standard out of the back of Article 6. It introduces a side interior adjacent to an RS setback. That way you're getting an additional setback where today as it sits, you could have 5-foot setback from the property line for a multifamily structure in an RM district. And so you're 5 feet from the property line one direction, 5 feet in the other direction. That puts your structures 10 feet apart, potentially. We were proposing that the RM districts have a 25-foot side yard setback when adjacent to an RS zone property. That would help mitigate the potential height difference with the RM districts being permitted to build, most of them, to 45 feet, where the RS are mostly permitted to 35 feet.
Michelle, I'm sorry, I should let you get
No, it's fine. This is confusing.
Excuse me, I feel like I have to ask a question at this time because this is such a lengthy thing.
That's fine.
When you're talking about the side interior, the 25-foot setback, I'm having problems visualizing this in an example, but wouldn't the height of the building dictate the setback?
We would get rid of that section.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The proposal is to get rid of that textual section that's buried back in the standards of Article 6 and put the standards in the tables so that it's up front, it's very prescribed as to what the setbacks are. So that section that I had talked about initially would be removed.
Okay, all right, I want to be clear about that. Thank you.
Yeah, feel free to ask questions if that helps, because I know sometimes it gets on to different stuff and then you lose your questions and they don't always make sense. This is not easy to explain.
If I might just interrupt you a little bit further here, just for the purpose of the commissioners, usually we get the applicant to go through everything and then we reserve questions. This is one that I think we need to make an exception to. So if you have questions, I think it'd be a good thing to ask, Michelle. Go ahead. Commissioner Lease.
Thank you. I appreciate your offering that because I don't want to vote on something I don't fully understand. Is 12D new then? Is that it's a transitional?
12.
RM12D.
No. RM12 and RM12D had the same standards and have the same standards today. We're proposing to break them apart and have their own standards in order to accommodate the side interior adjacent to RS addition.
Right. So that's sort of what I meant by new. Because they're breaking apart
from each
other.
It's new, but it's not a new zoning district.
Okay, how does something become RM12D?
We currently have RM12D. You can rezone to it. RM12D allows duplex. That's what the D is for. It does not allow, if I'm correct, does not allow the multifamily structures where RM12 does.
Okay.
So that's why it's more of that transitional potential in that area.
Thank you.
Okay, anyone else? Go ahead, Michelle. Thank you.
And just to clarify the footnote that I talked about referencing additional sections down at the bottom, footnote 5, that reference is 1004, which is the buffer yard section. Any development will be required to provide buffer yards between the uses. So that's a section that would need to be referenced. 1101 is a section regarding potential standards for residential districts. These are things that we can impose on development projects if we see glaring issues. We could say, well, you need a bigger buffer yard, or you need a bigger setback, or you need to address lighting in this way. It gives us the flexibility to enlist those different standards to help protect the existing RS. And then section 1307, it talks about, it's actually the institutional development plan section, but it specifically talks about protections for residential RS districts. Yeah.
1101 is the section that the League of Women Voters encouraged us to make mandatory, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, all right, thanks.
We did provide some examples. Hopefully this helps a little bit. This demonstrates what you could have today with the 5-foot setbacks. Granted, this does not take into consideration that you would be required to do buffer yards on this property when developed. With what staff is proposing, you're going to be set back 25 feet versus 10 feet, or 5 feet, 10 feet overall. So it would be a total of 30 feet between the structures. And if you didn't have any questions, I'm going to move on to the changes to the 601B, which is the non-residential. Okay. Here is where we got the idea for the side interior adjacent to RS. We already have that in our 601B table. We have increased the CO and the CN to side interior adjacent to RS from 20 to 25. And then in this section, we added rear setbacks adjacent to RS. There was a potential issue of having a rear-to-rear land use change, zoning change, and having additional setbacks through the rear yards was also important. So we went in and added those two, and then ended up changing to specify adjacent to RS and adjacent to non-RS in the two different rear zonings. So and then here's an example. The CN2, what we changed it to, you get an additional 5 feet. Again, you'd have buffer yards in there. And then in the rear, you had an additional 5 feet. So 55 feet between structures in the rear. Some additional changes we made for clarification. We have building max cover, is what it originally said, maximum impervious cover. These are different between table A and table B. We're trying to make all the terms consistent. We're changing it to maximum building coverage because that's already a defined term. And maximum impervious surface coverage. Those are defined terms. I thought we would be consistent and utilize what we have. And then again, we've changed footnote 5 to read the same as in the previous table. Again, here's the non-residential, changing the impervious building coverage, getting those consistent. We also did some clarification. These are the only two, the CC and the CR, that we changed. Actually, we flip-flopped the standard as it read. You couldn't have more, you could have bigger building than you could impervious lot coverage. So, yeah, that didn't make sense. So we just flip-flopped them because it really looked like the intent was to have more impervious lot coverage, smaller building, not bigger building, less impervious lot coverage, because that's not possible. And then, let's see, we also changed, that's probably on the next slide. Oh, we tweaked the height to the aisle district. Maximum height was 45 feet. We upped it to 60 feet with the potential of having structures with high ceilings and things like that. Made it more appropriate since the IBP's maximum height is 60, IG is 75, make it more consistent since it is the medium industrial district. We also got rid of a footnote, which doesn't show it. The footnote's on the next page. The footnote says that the standards for the GPI in the H district are the same as those in the IBP. We added it into the standard for the ease of getting rid of some of our footnotes. We've talked about having too many footnotes in our code, too many references and possibilities for slip up, so worked on getting rid of some of those footnotes. Added again here the district for the GPI and H for the BP for the setbacks and such, which gets rid of footnote 10. Again, we've tweaked what was footnote 9 to add the references to the potential standards for the RS protections. Deleted footnote 8 for the maximum building coverage for the CC and CR. Those are outlined in the table. Footnote 13. References the section that we are proposing to delete. So we deleted that. And then I just renumbered all the footnotes. This one is just a, this is 601C, the mixed use district standards. Again, we're just making the verbiage consistent for the impervious surface coverage. Oh. 602F, it's where our definition of building coverage currently lives. We would like to have all of our definitions in the definition and term section. And then all the numbers beyond that ended up getting renumbered with the removal of that district. 602G2 is the section that we're talking about. Here's the picture that goes along with it, with the text that I explained in the beginning with the RS and the R and the non-RS, just diagrams that the setback would match the building height. Article 17 is our general term section, and that's where we're proposing to move the building coverage definition. We're not proposing to change any of the text in the definition of the at this time. It's just a straight move. Staff does recommend approval of the text amendments, and if you have any further questions, if I haven't completely confused you, let me know.
Okay, this is a public hearing item, I believe. So any member of the public wishes to speak, come forward, please.
Nothing.
Telescope.
My name is Gwen Klingenberg, and I'm the president of the Lawrence Association of Neighborhoods. What you can't see is very important, though. And if you had this picture, you could see it very well. This is the apartment complex on Stewart, all of this back here. This is a was a single-story house. That apartment complex is this far away. Actually, more than that, because there's also there's 6 feet between this and another fence. And yet it looms, literally looms, over those homes. When this was first being built and we were looking at having changes made to the new code, one of the things I did was I went to several places where there were single family neighborhoods up against RM developments where there had been problems. And I talked to the single family owners of the houses, and they let me in their backyards. And they all had the concern about the fact that, well, for instance, this case, the building that I'm standing in front, the balcony actually faces the single family homes, and their balconies are looking into people's bedrooms. This is an issue. This was a big issue. Now that we're looking at changing this, I've gone back and talked to the same homes. They are all now rental properties. The Joseph Street, those are now rental properties. Along here, these are now rental properties. Several other places that I went to. And the reason why is because, as you can see in this scene, there is a big difference. We're not talking 25 feet or 45 feet. We're talking a very large distance. But it was still encroaching on people's privacies and their concerns of safety enough that they sold their homes and they had to sell them as rental property. Now, before I get too far along, I do want to thank the Planning Department. They have worked very hard on this, and there are really some very good things in this. And I do appreciate a lot of the table changes, for instance, the RM12 and the RMD12. I hope you all had a chance to read what I turned in last month. I know it was a little long, but not as long as the turf, so I was hoping you'd have the time to read it. But we do appreciate that the staff did decide to separate the RM12 and the RMD12. But the issue still stands with the height. Now, I do appreciate that the 25-foot setback is going to make a difference. And I think it's an important difference, and I really appreciate that. But the biggest concern is taking the 2602, the H, and removing that part. Completely removing it without putting anything in its place that still states mandatory that we make sure that we protect the single family homes. The only other place we really have in the codes is 20-1101, which is permissive. It gives the Planning Department, the Planning Commission, and the City Commission the opportunity to decide whether or not there would be any consideration for protecting those single family homes. But if we remove this one, this is the one that the league also is concerned about, if we remove it, we lose the mandatory. And as you were stating earlier, we don't know always what's in the RS, so we don't know if it's a duplex or a single family home or an attached garage, but we've lost the mandatory to make sure we go and check it and protect it. The state codes, 19-2956, Planning and Zoning in Urban Areas, it states that it is the job of plans and regulations shall be designed in accordance with the present and future needs of the country and shall promote the public health, safety, morals, comfort, convenience, prosperity, and general welfare, and to protect the land, air, water, and natural resources, and so forth. If you check online for any rules about zoning, LawBrains, where I got one, I also looked at four different other places, their definition of zoning. Zoning laws are intended to promote the health, safety, welfare, convenience, morals, and prosperity of the community at large, and are meant to enhance the general welfare rather than to improve the economic interest of any particular property owner. They are designed to stabilize neighborhoods and preserve the character of the community by guiding its future growth. The reason why it is so important that we don't continue to lose affordable single-family homes, even though this particular one on Stewart Avenue is so far away because you have the double parking lot and you have the driveway through plus two fences, and it's still cut into those people's privacy. It hurt their safety. It gave them a feeling of being watched. That is what we don't want to do. And the whole reason why we zone is in order to protect those single family homes. And so I hope that you will try, and I know my time is up, but he will give me my time, more time, okay. That instead of just cutting out 2602, that we find some way to incorporate the new things that have been added, which I think are great, I think they're super, but that we make sure that at some point something mandatory states that once we figure out that's a single family home, we need to take care of it. In many cases, there are parking lots, so you don't need such a big setback. So that might be a different case. But on Joseph, those are apartments are put directly on the setback. And those families, and I did some pictures in the packet from Joseph, where the people who own the properties end up having to pay for more trees and bushes and a fence. So are we asking that we're going to make it not as extremely burdensome on the RM so that we force the single family homeowners to have to buy fencing and other things in order to feel that they still maintain those same rights they had as a single family owner, those protections and those privacy issues, and then still find out that we're going to turn them into rental property because we still don't have those even after the additional cost? I don't think that's what we want. I don't think that's what you want. And I know it's not what the planning department wants, but we're trying to find a way to make this all work. And they think this will work, but as long as we don't know exactly what's there, how are we going to make sure unless we state absolutely that we have to? I think that's all I have. Anything else? Any questions?
Any questions for Gwen? Thank you very much. Would anyone else from the public like to speak? Okay, seeing none, we'll close the public hearing. Bring it back to the commissioners for discussion and motions. Commissioner Finkeldye.
And I think I know this answer, Scott, but can you explain why 2601 is not mandatory? I mean, what I hear Gwen saying is that.
Are you talking about 11?
1101.
1101?
Well, maybe.
2011-01 are the title protection standards for residential districts. And it talks about that as a condition of approval that the planning director, in terms of site plans, can impose conditions that exceed the minimum requirements. And the minimum requirements are in Article 6. So that's the setbacks, height, those sorts of things. Give you an example, one of the things listed is placement and buffering of trash receptacles. Mm-hmm. We're going through a site plan right now along Iowa Street that has, that's a gas station, fuel station that's backs up to some residential, and they had planned to put the trash receptacle at the only residential structure, and we worked with them to get that away from that house. Even though the code didn't really say you have to have so many feet from the trash receptacle from a RS zoning district, we made that decision because of the fact that 1101 exists and gives us direction to make sure that we have those protections to RS zoning. But 20-1101 is permissive in the sense that it gives us the authority to make those requirements, but it's also broad enough where we have to identify the requirement. It's too, you couldn't incorporate every specific issue that we encompass, that we come across in a site plan review, for example. So it talks about, you know, not necessarily limited to the following: additional landscaping, location of loading and delivery areas, lighting, intensity, those sorts of things. So that if we get an issue brought to us by a neighbor or neighborhood, or we identify it ourselves, the code gives us the authority to make the requirements. That's different than the rest of the code, which is sets out the very minimum requirements that has to be set up. So we're not attempting to even touch 20-1101. We appreciate that it's there for us. We use it, and we think it's appropriate. Our issue is with, it started out being with the 602H.
that had, just in how it was worded, the height versus setback relationship. And I think that's been the issue. And you know, one of the things we can talk about are options. I don't know that we've articulated very well tonight what our issue is with that section, but there are at least two ways to resolve or address that issue. And one of the ways we talked about back when we were going through the PD overlay amendments, and then the other way is what we're bringing to you tonight, which is in lieu of requiring a bigger setback for a building that's taller than a single-story building on its adjacent property, should the code be more objective and more prescriptive and more prescriptive in the sense that, okay, now I know what the setback is, I can get on with my development. And so the concern is there for us. It's not the highest level concern we've ever brought to you, but we thought it was good to pick it up in our many amendments that we do, and it's spurred this discussion. It's good discussion. But I think there are different ways we can address it. If we'd like to hear from you what your comfort level is, how you would address the issues that we have with that particular section. If you want me to expound on what those concerns are, I'm happy to.
Mr. Von Ocken.
What's the possible maximum height of a building that could go next to an RS building?
60 feet.
With the 602 section, it would be whatever the height of the adjacent structure is of the RS district. So whatever the height of that district is what that structure would be.
Or
maximum height, or it could be the maximum height of that district, but it would have to be set back the height of that.
And that's what I'm asking. So what's the maximum height for that building that would be set back equal to its height?
Either 35 or 45 feet.
45 feet in our M districts, up to 90 feet in downtown commercial district, 60 to 75 feet in industrial districts.
So the change that you're seeking would make a 25-foot setback as just a standard for all of these situations, and without that, it could go anywhere from 35 on up. Is that what I'm hearing?
It's a little more specific than that. In the RM districts, for example, the difference in height between RS and RM is 10 feet, 35 feet to 45 feet. So there's a height difference in the district of 10 feet. We are proposing that instead of a 5-foot setback that they have now, to make that a 25-foot setback. Mm-hmm. And they would have the opportunity to go up to 45 feet tall versus the RS 35-foot tall. And I think the issues that Gwen and others are bringing up is that some of the older neighborhoods aren't building 35-foot tall single-family homes. Some are. Some of our new neighborhoods have that kind of height to it, but some aren't. And so is that 25 feet enough difference between a 35-foot single-family structure and a 45-foot apartment complex? So that's one of the issues. I might mention to you that our original proposal didn't look necessarily at the setback issues. Our original concern was that this talks about matching structures, not zoning district maximums, but structures. And that posed a lot of challenges for us if there were multiple structures. The fact that one year the structure next door is a one-story, and then they put a one-story addition on, now they've doubled their height, and that's affected the development on the adjacent non-RS parcel. Our original proposal, when we went through the PD overlay amendments, was to change a few words in here and make it still set back, but only set back if the structure, the non-RS structure, exceeded the zoning district maximum height. So if you had an RM district and you exceeded 35 feet, then you had to be set back to the height of the building. Versus if you were over the 15, 17-foot single-story roof peak, then you had to match that or meet it. So we were trying to make a little more objective in terms of matching a zoning district standard versus a specific structure next door.
Commissioner Van Alken?
And so, I'm sorry, you kind of lost me there. That last statement you said, okay, now wait a minute. You were trying to, so for example, if an RM exceeded the 35-foot zoning max, then they would have to be the height of that structure. The setback would have to be the height of that structure. Is that correct? So if they did not exceed it and they were 35 feet, then what would the setback be?
Well, under the current code, if we made the changes to say that in this section and kept the current setbacks, the setback would be 5 feet. So maybe it's some combination of meeting the district height with changes to go from 5 feet to 25 feet.
I thought under the current code it would have to be 35. It would have to be the height of the...
It would. Under the current code, if the RS district, if there's a house right here that's 18 feet tall, to get a 5 foot setback, this location, this structure has to be 18 feet tall. If it wants to be 45 feet tall and take advantage of the full height of the district, then it has to set back 45 feet from that. So the issue that we had with the language, though, was all the ambiguity and subjectiveness of what are we trying to match, because if you have a row of houses or multiple houses here, or structures on both sides, for example, which one do you match? The lowest one, the tallest of the adjacent RS, the average of that? It just poses some practical problems for us. So we're not setting out to necessarily relax the standards or take away the value of the protection in this part of the code. We're just trying to make it more objective, a little more numbers oriented. Okay, if you're going to be taller than the district maximum here, what is that setback going to be? Is it going to be the height of the building, or is it going to be some compromise in between the 5 feet and the height of the building? What's it going to be? And so that's the discussion I think we'd like the commission to have this evening, is what's the protection that we're after, and then I think we can build a code to address that.
Mr. Britton?
So, Scott, this was an earlier proposal that you were thinking of submitting, and then eventually it sort of didn't get into this?
This is on the books today.
Okay.
This was brought to the commission, Commissioner Britton, before your tenure began, with another text amendment that the proposal at the time was, instead of it saying, if the building is the same or lesser height than the building or structure on the adjoining RS lot, we wanted to say, when the building or structure is the same or lesser height than the district height maximum.
Right. And so, but that's not what's being proposed tonight.
It's not proposed tonight. That was the first kind of round and didn't receive a lot of support. So then we started looking at different ways to look with the setbacks to make that the objective way to address the issue.
And what was, if you remember, I mean, what was the problem? This was all before my time. What was the problem with that?
I believe it was just the issue was that it didn't necessarily go far enough with taking into account that the RS district standards, some would argue, have a pretty tall height limit, 35 feet. And older neighborhoods, established neighborhoods, don't always reach that maximum. They have the opportunity to. They would have the property right to come in and say, I want to take down a house, build a new one up. And we're not trying to say that that's the trend or the pattern or that that happens a lot, but they do have that ability. And so that was probably, that's the reason I recall it not moving very far.
So it's because there are some established neighborhoods that are below the maximum height for that zoning, and this would, then you could have a 35-foot tall building next to a 12-foot tall house or whatever, because that was how that neighborhood was built or whatever.
Right. That was part of that discussion.
Other questions? comments? Discussion? Commissioner Lees.
Gwen, thank you for your presentation and also for all you've written. I assume that was your 3 or 4 page note with pictures. It would be helpful, by the way, if there were names on those, because I finally figured out that was you. And it's not, it may be that you didn't put your name at the bottom of that, but I assumed it was yours. In our packet, your name's not on. No, that's okay. I can see every side of the of this argument. It all makes sense to me. An argument you made, though, is almost no matter how far away a tall building is, it still can feel imposing. Isn't that sort of what you were saying? Those apartment buildings were really far from that house. So that was hundreds of feet away, and it was still imposing. So it seems like any number we come up, this is the only point I want to make, any number we come up with, the height of the building as set back, or even 25 feet, is arbitrary, because there can be a 100-foot away building that's tall, and it could still feel imposing. I think that was your point about the pictures, which makes it really hard to say that one is right and one is wrong, 25 feet versus the height of the building. So we're going to have to pick an arbitrary number. I don't want to fool myself into thinking that there's some science or physics or any kind of other exercise here that can ensure that we'll make the right choice. So 25 is arbitrary, but it does make sense that it should be a constant versus a variable number, the constant being 25. That does make sense because, like you said, if there's a 12-foot building and a 30-foot building and a 20-foot building all surrounding the proposed property, I don't know how we were picking it before, but a constant number seems to make more sense, especially since even a 100-foot away building can seem imposing. I hope what I just said makes sense.
Okay, any other discussion? I'll make a couple of comments if nobody else wants to. The footnote 5 that you talked about initially, I think it was in 602A, where it uses the including but not limited to language. Just as a lawyer, this is a beef I have with a lot of things that are drafted like this. I know the intent was to draw the attention to the sections that are listed. But when you use the magic words including but not limited to, it really reduces the reader to searching the entire code to find out what the other but not limited to really refers to. It would be really helpful in these situations if we could have a reference to the sections that also apply. Or I don't think we should fool ourselves into thinking that this short circuits the search that has to be done through the code. Okay, that's one comment. The other thing that I think this is a fairly well supported text amendment. I understand and I read and reread the letter from the league and also Gwen's letter and the pictures were outstanding. It was very helpful to see it illustrated. It seems to me that one of the major points of contention is whether 1101 should be mandatory or not. And my general inclination is that I think we have a very good staff and that allowing the flexibility to impose additional requirements is a real positive thing. I get uncomfortable when it's mandatory. And at the same time, I also want to say that I think that I'm sure that there is some strident disagreement among members of some neighborhoods. But I think in the past several years, the Planning Commission has shown as a policy that protecting single family residences is important in this town. And I think there are a lot of examples in neighborhood plans and various things that have come before the commission where, you know, I think we've shown an inclination to be sensitive to preserving our neighborhoods and that single family ownership is an important part of that mix. So I guess I would support the text amendment. I wish we could do something about footnote 5 and that language, but it appears a lot of places in a lot of different texts, not just here. But I think I would probably disagree a little bit with the league about whether 1101 should be mandatory. And I don't see that as a big crisis in this, because I think we have a good staff, and that the policy that has been followed by the commission will be followed by the staff. Okay, those are my comments. Anyone else? Commissioner Finkeldye.
And I thought I understood this before I came in, and then I confused myself. But as I read this now, Scott, am I right that the use table, I mean, that the table you're proposing is mandatory? 25 feet is mandatory.
Yes.
Right. So the question is, and the issue of what 1101 making it mandatory is really a question of whether or not it's mandatory that you might increase over the what's in the table to protect the as it says in 1101, protect the
right. If we wanted though something greater than
25 feet,
we
just put it in the code.
Dimension table.
Yeah. Right.
Because I don't think it's looking at a minimum standard like a setback and saying do something more restrictive. Right. It's more getting at those. I mean, when you read through the list of issues there, they're more site design elements. Right.
But 1101 gives you the power to increase that. If for some reason you wanted to say, because it preserved the light and privacy, it affected the light and privacy, we're going to make it 30 feet instead of 25.
Right.
And Gwen, is it your point that that should be, you want them to look at, you want that to be mandatory, so that they have to review that each time? Can't you come up?
Absolutely, yeah.
Fight the other crowd members.
What we want to do is make sure that, yes, it is at least looked at, that they understand that they don't just take accept what's being turned in by the applicant, but they go and they say, okay, we need to make sure. So I wasn't exactly sure how we were going to do it. I said, we're not exactly sure how we want to do it. I agree, 2602 doesn't work anymore with the new tables, but we lose that assurance that we won't just accept what's being proposed, and that we make sure. Yes, we have a great planning commission, we have a great planning department now, but who knows what's going to be 5 years from now when this is still the text. And we want those assurances that we've had. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that making 1101 mandatory, but maybe something that gives that assurance that we now have that we're losing. Mm-hmm. And when I was talking about the apartments here, I'm talking about those balconies that actually face the houses, not necessarily the ones that are sitting off to the side, but those balconies that are looking in, those are the big issues. Mm-hmm. Is that it? Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. You still need the okay. Floor. So we have so what it says now, and I'm talking myself through this so I understand it. So maybe there's a question, I don't know. I'm now back on 43. So the footnote number 5 says additional setback to properties adjacent to RS, and these standards include but not limited, and that sends you to 2101. So if a project comes in, Scott, if a project comes in and it has the 25, let's say this was passed, and there's a 25-foot setback, how do you process 1101 issues?
We would process those if, I mean, as I see it, first of all, the footnote also includes buffer standards and things that might increase a setback because the buffer yard needs to be accounted for. That's the main way I think a setback can be increased from the Article 6 tables, Chapter 6 tables. We wouldn't set out necessarily to say you're next to an RS district, you need greater standards. If there were a compelling neighborhood issue that was brought to us through the notification process to the neighborhood and the neighbors that made us identify that as an issue and then identify the resolution to be a greater setback. That's how I can see that playing out. We would be authorized to do so. The applicant may say, well, this says may, and that's not the setback, and then we may get to the city commission or the attorney's room or however that might play out, but I think we've got authority to look at it as it's an identified issue. But as proposed, we wouldn't set out saying that we believe the direction from the commission is to have our base setbacks even adjacent to RS, but we're always going to want more if you're adjacent to RS. I think we land on what's the minimum setback. Are you meeting the minimum setback? Check. You know, go on to the next one. Are you meeting your height? Check. And that's what we do. We make sure that applications are compliant with the development code. It's only when we identify through our own review or through a neighborhood's review or neighbor's review an issue that we start employing the 20-1101 issues.
So what about, like, the issue Gwen just brought up? I mean, if a building was set a certain way so there's no windows looking over versus a bunch of balconies looking at the, I mean, is there any way that that sets off?
Well,
is that just up to the particular planner who might sense that as an issue?
Not necessarily, but I'll give you an example of something where, we've got other standards about balconies on a multi-dwelling unit building. It needs to double the required minimum setback, and landscaping is enhanced. So there are some balcony standards.
Oh, so if there's a balcony facing, you have additional rule.
Right.
Oh,
but
well, okay.
I can give you a story about a site plan that we were very supportive of from a design standpoint. It was Frontier Apartments, where our good turf issue is as well. And we thought that it was really going to enhance the neighborhood. And when they had their neighborhood meeting, they completely rejected the plan. One at the parking lot back adjacent to them, pushed the buildings different orientation and that sort of thing. And so we really need the input of the neighborhood, I think, is vital in this as well. And so while we can identify issues and things, that neighborhood input is just as important. And so that's when I talk about, I want those issues to come from the neighborhood, who have every opportunity to come down and look at the site plan to determine whether or not it's compatible or meeting their needs or not. And they're fully noticed on those issues.
Okay, now.
Commissioner Singleton.
I guess I just want to say that I support the text amendment as presented by staff. I appreciated a lot of the communications and comments that Gwen made, but I think that, first of all, I do think that the flexibility that the changes offer to the Planning Commission are going to be more beneficial as we look individually where these projects come up. And the second thing is that we are experiencing a real shift in our culture about how housing is going to turn over in our communities. And unfortunately, it's going to be very expensive for people to buy single family homes because of new regulations that are coming up with financing right now. And we've got to start, as a community that probably has some of the highest amount of rental property in the state, we've got to start looking at these apartment buildings as part of our neighborhoods and recognizing that the people who can't afford to come up with a 30% down payment and live in apartment buildings are still members of the neighborhood, and that they can still be stable members of the neighborhood. They're looking at school districts when they're renting apartments. They're looking at the neighborhood parks when they're looking at their apartment building. And they offer as much to the neighborhoods and the neighborhood associations as the people who can afford to buy a home in Lawrence, which is frankly expensive in our community. Additionally, as somebody who has a two-story house and my neighbors have a one-story house, I can look into their window just as much as somebody who had a three-story apartment on the other side of the street from me. And I live in an older neighborhood, and my home is on the sides of me. The houses that were built are probably 10 or 15 feet away from me. And,
I do think that the flexibility of having staff being able to look at these individual projects as they come in is beneficial. I like the text amendment as it's written, and I think that this premise about single-family housing being the only thing that needs to be stabilized probably isn't the right premise in our community.
Okay, other discussion? Commissioner Von Ocken.
I'm a little confused now, Gwen, about what you're asking for. I know you would like to see 1101 be mandatory. I thought you also wanted 2602 to be left in, but a moment ago you said you saw that this didn't work anymore. So I don't know where.
Come on up, Gwen.
I just don't know where that leaves us in this discussion.
The 2602, with the changes in the table, would require some changes. It really would, because those tables do make a difference, and they make a good difference, but they don't necessarily always make as strong a difference. So we might need, if we took it out, that's the only place we have a mandatory, that you have to look at something, you have to take a look at something. If we remove the 602, the suggestion to try to open up the discussion was to let you know that 201101 existed, because it wasn't being discussed. It isn't part of the agenda, but I wanted to make sure that you knew it existed and that it was there. And, you know, even the economic times will change around, and home ownership has always been very important. And I know that a lot of condos and things are like in a type apartment buildings, but home ownership is important, and it will be important, and it has to be important, because it's one of those few American goals we all have. And protecting those single-family homes has always been very important. It is part of our state statute. It is part of our federal regulations. So I think it's important that we do what we can to protect the single-family homes, especially the affordable ones, because in many times the bigger apartments and things and your infill are in older neighborhoods.
But I don't understand how you want us to do that.
What I want was this discussion so we could find something, because the way things are now, we lose something without gaining some, without protecting it or keeping it, but I wasn't quite sure where it needed to go. And as I stated in my speech, I thought maybe at 602 we could downgrade it there, maybe make those changes in there to still keep a somewhat of a mandatory, but limit that mandatory because the tables have now made a change that are important. But there are some places, for instance, in my neighborhood, I live next door to an IBP, we're allowed a 60-story building in there, which has been a problem and a concern. And if you noted, when we had the hotel issue, my neighborhood showed up because they didn't want something really tall there. So it is an issue, whether it's 60 feet or 45 feet next to a bunch of ranch homes. And the issue, yes, okay, you've got a couple of single stories and a couple of two stories. It is questions that need to be answered. And I was just trying to give you places where things exist, but I don't have the answer. I'm hoping that with the work we've done, this is work that I've been allowed to be involved in, and we have helped. I think we got it from 15 feet to 25 feet. I think we had an effect over the RM12 and the RM12D being separated. But there are questions that still have to be dealt with. And I don't think this particular one is quite ready. I would like to have a few of those other questions answered before we just pass this on. But I think we have it is a great start. But somewhere, either by just changing 2602 to acknowledge the tables, but still give us some place that say, you've got a single family home, neighborhood, and you're building this, you need to take a look. RM against RM, RM against commercial, RM against something else, industrial, you wouldn't need to take a look. But if it's going next to an RS, you would need to take a look. Based on what Scott says, places the burden on the neighborhood shoulders and not on the planning department and the planning commission. And there are neighborhoods that aren't active right now, that if you were to do something about this and do something like this, and then they find out afterwards, they would be active, but it would be late. and this is the opportunity to take and protect those neighborhoods and not just the ones that are very active. And we have several that aren't active, and I have contacts, but I got one person. And I don't think it's the job of the neighborhoods to set that something isn't accurate or isn't working right. I think if we said, okay, you've got an RM or something next to an RS, then at this time, you as a staff need to go and make sure that it works, okay, and not leave it to us.
Thank you.
Does that help? All right, thanks.
Thanks.
Question for staff. What would you think about including the provision that if there is RM next to RS, that staff shall review the provision of 1101, make a determination?
Well, again, I think that the way we use 1101 is very contextual. And we do review it. I mean, we do, that's part of our review. Thinking about the setback to height issue, you know, in its purest sense, right now with 602H, it's saying to set back your height if you're adjacent to RS and you're over the height limit of the structure. Well, if we presume that that's going to occur most of the time, if not all of the time, then one thing we could consider if we want to make it a little more objective in the code is just make any non-RS zoning district, when they're adjacent to an RS zoning district, have a setback equal to its maximum height. Now, Commissioner Finkeldine is shaking his head, but that presumes then that everyone's going to try to get at the maximum height, and that's not always the case either. That's why we kind of looked for the medium ground there, to say it's not, shouldn't be the maximum, shouldn't be 5 feet certainly, but what's an appropriate setback S to non-RS zoning.
Commissioner Lease?
Thank you. Is there any science to this? I mean, am I the only one who thinks that these numbers are arbitrary, 25 feet, 30 feet? I mean, is there physics?
I think they're standard in terms of what we see kind of nationwide with kind of urban development.
25 feet standard or height to
setback?
I think
both. It's for a community that doesn't have high-rise standards, I would say that these are pretty typical. And they're not going
to
be exactly
the same. Okay to me. I just can't convince myself that one's better than the other. One seems more practical than the other to make it a constant seems more practical, but it still all seems very arbitrary. Good. She's nodding. I like that. And it's not good or bad. I just don't want to try to figure out what would be the best number.
Right.
And I'm glad that Gwen influenced planning staff to increase it by 5 feet, 10 feet. If you feel good about that, I feel good about that.
We've had at least one meeting where we talked, and we wanted to come at this together.
Yeah, that's obvious.
And it's needed a lot of work for some time now, and that's why you're seeing so many different kind of little changes as well.
Any other discussion, motions? Commissioner Finkeldine.
I'm back to where I was when I came in. I lost myself there for a while in the details, but I came back around. I agree. I think I'm going to support what the staff is proposing. I certainly understand Lan's position, Gwen's position on knowing that in certain situations this doesn't work. I was, by the way, happy I did not know that we had a different balcony restriction. That's helpful to know. But I still think there could be times in which 2101, that the 25 feet is not enough. But those are, you know, like you said, Scott, contextual. And either we have to trust the staff to handle these issues, or we have to come up with a pretty complex way to impose that. So given those two choices, I'm going to side on trusting the staff to use 2101 with these use tables that set the 25-foot minimum. And we should note that under the current standards, an average one-story house is closer to 21 feet. I mean, and so this puts a 25-foot standard. I mean, you under the current code, you'd have a 21-foot setback if you wanted to build a 20-foot, 1-foot. If you want to build a 22-foot deal next to it, you could just go 22 feet. I mean, this puts a minimum of 25. So there is some situations without help. I think separating out 12D is very helpful to make that a transitional zone. So I'll go ahead and I'm going to support the staff's recommendation. I don't want to cut off discussion, but I could make a motion. Well, I'll make a motion, then people can keep talking. I would move, I would forward as a recommendation for approval the proposed text amendments set forth in item number 2 for the City Commission for review.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Singleton. Discussion on the motion. Commissioner Britton.
Just throw in my 2 cents. I, coming into this, was very confused about everything since I'm still the new guy around here, but I think I understand what's going on, and I definitely share Gwen's concerns about situations where homeowners buy a house and they have some expectation about what kind of neighborhood they're moving into and all of that, and they don't want to have that expectation upset for many different kinds of reasons. That's definitely valid and something that I share. I think about with my own neighborhood. So, but I think that, you know, we can try and make as many rules as we want to accommodate as many situations as we can possibly envision, but we're never going to accomplish all of them or anticipate all of them, and that's why the process is the sort of the most important thing. And I think that the process here seems to be a good one. 2011-01 allows the process to have flexibility in these situations to come in and say, no, this actually needs special attention. And I think that we have a planning commission and a professional planning staff and usually an active community of citizens and property owners that process is what's going to make the difference in these sort of situations. And I think at some point we have to have confidence in that process that it'll do that. And I do in this situation, so I'll support this text amendment.
Other discussion on the motion? Mr. Blazer?
Well, I also will support the motion. I think there's enough in it now, enough facts, if you will, that pretty much clarifies things. Plus with 2011, if there is a problem, or if the community suggests there's a problem, then we have a way to go back and change. And again, I don't know how you would write something that covers everything. For instance, the first picture that Gwen showed, I don't know how you cover that, because that's a long distance away, as you indicated, 2 fences. I too had forgotten there was a balcony issue, I mean, rules already. So for those reasons, and plus I think the planners have done a heck of a job working on this. It's almost been a career. Working on this, so I will support this.
Wait till we talk about the subdivision regulations.
Those are cool. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Anyone else? Commissioner Berger.
I appreciate these presentation by staff and the comments from Lan, and also what the League of Women Voters had sent in. It's a lot clearer to me now as I've sat through and listened to all this than it was reading it on my own. So, and with the other commissioners, I'm very thankful that you all are here and have wonderful questions. A lot of what other people have said, I would just be saying again. I will add that we are in a changing culture. Commissioner Singleton spoke to the fact that residential real estate is changing. The requirements are changing, and also I think there's some evidence that the cultural desires are changing, and home ownership is not necessarily as desirous of as much of the culture as it was at one point in time. just as transportation by automobile is not as preferred as it was in our culture. So I think what we're doing here is a really good start to allowing us to preserve and maintain as best we can while being sensitive to the culture and how it's changing. I don't think we can necessarily always make cause and effect statements. I think there's more going on in the culture than just one thing or even two things. But I think everybody involved in this community cares about everybody living together. And I especially appreciate what Commissioner Singleton said about thinking of these apartments as part of neighborhoods. I hadn't thought of that before, and so I really appreciate that. So I will be supporting this motion.
Okay. Commissioner Von Ocken?
I think that 201101 should not be mandatory. I don't think that would serve anybody on any side. I think that we need the flexibility. I am very concerned about protecting the character of existing neighborhoods and protecting the people who have invested both financially and emotionally in their homes in these neighborhoods. And I wish I knew how to, that bothers me. I'm not sure how to accommodate that, how to go about giving more protection than perhaps this text amendment does. I'm going to support the text amendment just because I don't know of a better answer, but I think it should be one of our top priorities to protect existing homeowners and their neighborhoods.
Okay, anyone else want to speak to the motion? Okay, seeing none, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of the motion, raise your hand. All those opposed? Motion passes 8-0. Okay, the last thing on the agenda.
I think with the student in the affirmative.
Oh, I'm sorry. With the student in the affirmative. Forgive me. Last thing on the agenda for this evening is miscellaneous item one, which is the letter of support for the Tiger 3 grant.
Mr. Chairman, the city engineer was going to hang out with you tonight, but saw the agenda and decided to let me have this one. So it's pretty straightforward. We're trying to go for a grant that would help pay for a portion of the interchange at K-10 Highway and Bob Billings Parkway. The city is reaching out to all kinds of organizations, such as LAN. The MPO saw this last week. You're seeing this. We're trying to drum up some support for getting some federal dollars into this important infrastructure project for the community. And so we'd ask for your motion to approve this exceptionally written letter by the planning director.
Well, I might just comment, first of all, that since I have to sign this, I want this to be an exceptionally well-written letter. Mr. Singleton, we'll start at your end and work this way.
I just wanted to say that I thought it was an exceptionally well-written letter, and I move that we all vote to authorize Rick to sign this and send it on its way.
I'll second.
A second by Commissioner Blazer. Discussion. Commissioner Lease?
The only fly in the ointment here is that it actually isn't Tiger 3. It's simply Tiger.
Yeah.
So we need to amend the motion if it had the phrase
exceptionally
three.
Well written. That is not.
It's
not well exceptionally well written.
So
you learned that at MPO this.
It needs to be amended. It needs to be amended.
Come on, Rick did right.
Actually, the motion was correct. The letter.
Was
it was just you're right. Okay.
So it's just Tiger, not Tiger 3.
So the motion is deemed amended to refer to Tiger instead of Tiger 3.
Yeah.
Okay, Commissioner Finkeldey.
Just a quick question: is this an oval? 15th Street go oval K-10 or is it under?
I think it would be an overpass.
Overpass. That's what that. Okay. Interesting.
Any other questions? Comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, raise your hand. Opposed, same sign. Motion passes 8-0 with a student in the affirmative. Unless there's something else that you have for this evening, we will be adjourned until Wednesday. Thank you.